Welcome to the Orvis Fly Fishing Guide podcast with Tom Rosenbauer, bringing you tips, tricks, and techniques to help you get the most of your time on the water. Here's your host, acclaimed fly fishing author and lifelong fly fishing enthusiast, Tom Rosenbauer.
Hi, and welcome to the Orvis Fly Fishing Guide podcast. This podcast is being recorded on April 24th, 2014. And I have to warn you that, as you know, if you're a regular podcast listener, we stay away from blatant commercial plugs. But at the end of this podcast, there is a blatant commercial plug, and I'll tell you more about it as we get further into the podcast. But right now, let's go to the fly box where we've got some questions that people sent via email. I didn't have any phone calls this past 3-4 weeks, so I didn't have any phone calls that I could answer anyways. So these are all going to be emails that people sent in. The first one's from Charlotte. Charlotte says, I notice the Orvis company does not market some leader and tipping material as particularly suitable for saltwater fishing. I can readily understand that some fly lines are necessarily better suited for cold water, warm water, when the flexibility of the line, for that matter, tippet or leader, can be critical to presentation. After reading Orvis product information on leader and tip materials, I have confidence that your products are well tested and researched. So she also says, in spin fishing, I never noticed any problem with the monofilaments that I used in fresh and salt water. I'd like your take on the subject, and I know you fish both warm salt water and cold fresh water. Well, Charlotte, you're absolutely right. There is no difference in fishing either nylon monofilament or fluorocarbon in fresh or salt water. Now, there are favorites. For instance, I use fluorocarbon in salt water because I'm almost always fishing a sinking fly, not always a sinking line, but it's rare that you use poppers in salt water. I shouldn't say rare. I love to fish poppers, but it's not as common as fishing sinking flies for everything from bonefish to striped bass, even though fishing on the surface is more fun. But I use fluorocarbon because I like the way it sinks, and I also like the abrasion resistance that you get from fluorocarbon, because in salt water you're often fishing around coral and limestone and things that can nick your line. Now, my bone fishing buddy, Aaron Adams, uses nylon, and we fish side by side, and I have to admit, he probably catches more fish than me, but he's a better angler than I am, and he knows bonefish better. So it's really up to you. In fresh water, I like to fish a nylon leader because I want most of my leader to float or be close to the surface. But then I often use a fluorocarbon tippet, tie it onto the end of the nylon leader, and a lot of people do that. So you're absolutely right. You can use nylon or fluorocarbon in either fresh or salt water, depending on what you want to get out of the line, what you want your tippet to do. The next email is from John from upstate New York. John was fishing a small stream, and he caught a big brown last year, 23 inches. Congratulations, John. And he says, I hooked up with another brown. This is this season. This time, after 30 seconds or so, it pulled me into some heavy, fast water and broke me off. After breaking me off its surface, as if to say, nice try, buddy. It looked to be about the same size as the fish I had caught last year or bigger. My question are, number one, what are the chances that this was the same fish from last year? Well, pretty good chance, John, particularly with brown trout. A bigger, older brown trout tends to inhabit the same place. They find a really good, secure place where they can get food and they have shelter and the water temperature is good. And they'll stay there until they die. So your question number two is, since I will undoubtedly be going back to that same spot soon, how long before that fish will take a fly again? Well, probably a day or two should be fine to rest that fish. Now, I wouldn't go back with the same fly, obviously, and I wouldn't even approach it from the same direction, and I'd try a totally different technique because trout can learn, and brown trout in particular seem to have pretty good capability for remembering things. So that fish should be ready the next time you go out there. But I'd try a little bit different technique, different time of day, different fly, different size fly, different action. Make it something different so that you're not presenting the same fly that stung that fish to it again. But they absolutely, and they've proven this scientifically. Biologists have proven that large brown trout, or brown trout in general, go back to the same spot year after year. They don't always, but they can. And I also, in my stream, my backyard gets electroshocked every year or 2 years or 3 years. And I'll take photographs of some of the larger fish, and then I can compare those photographs from year to year. And the spot pattern on every trout is unique. So if you look very carefully, you'll see a particular pattern on the spots. And you can identify that fish. It's like a fingerprint from year to year. So I do know they stay in one place. They also move around. And if something happens, if the habitat changes, that trout may find a new place to live. But probably is the same fish. This one's from Aaron, and Aaron wants to know, regarding fishing pressured trout, fish in areas where most folks may not even think to fish, such as very shallow waters and riffles. He lives in West Virginia, where they have a good number of trout streams, and it isn't very difficult to get away from the heavily fished areas just by willing to walk a long distance. My question is there a specific condition or conditions that are better suited for the trout to venture into these seemingly less productive holding areas, conditions such as temperature, time of day, light, hatch stages, etc.? And will these occurrences of trout in less obvious areas be as frequent or potentially more frequent in remote areas versus pressured areas? You know what? From what I've seen, the places that fish live in less pressured areas are exactly the same as where they live in pressured areas. In fact, good habitat is good habitat, and if there's a really good pool that's got everything a trout needs right next to a road and right where people step into the river to go fishing, that fish will stay right there. And it might get spooked every time somebody steps into the river, but they'll take up places, even if they're right alongside the road in heavily trafficked areas, they'll take up places where they can feed and where they feel secure. And that's not going to change in the less pressured areas. What's going to change is if there is a lot of harvest, a lot of people are killing fish, you'll probably find more fish in these less pressured areas. And when you have a denser population of trout, bigger fish tend to push the smaller fish into less optimal habitat. So you might find some fish in habitat that's not quite as good as others. But if there isn't much harvest and they're wild fish, they'll distribute themselves about the same as they would in the pressured areas. They're probably going to be a little bit easier to catch. Not any less spooky, but they might be a little less wary regarding fly pattern and leaders and so on. So hope that answered your question, Aaron. The next letter is from Kevin. It's K-E-V-E-N. I hope I pronounced that right, Kevin. Kevin, probably. Kevin's been tying saltwater flies and has questions about the way feathers are oriented. He tied some tarpon flies for a trip last year, and the feathers were curved outward away from the hook based on the fly instructions. I live in Massachusetts and have been tying for stripers and blues, making the feathers point outward as well. It seems like they will have more action when pulled through the water. Is this the case, or will it cause them to look too unnatural? Good question, Kevin, and it's six of one, half dozen of the other, really. Lefty Cray typically ties his deceiver with the curve of the feather placed together so that they don't splay outward. However, he does tie some with the feathers splayed outward, as you would in a tarpon fly, and it just gives them a different action. Now, probably where you have a little bit wider bait fish, the splayed feathers might work better, and tarpon often feed on a, you know, herring and shad and deeper bodied fish. So they might prefer a feather splayed outward, or the feather splayed outward do give the fly more action. It just might be more appealing to a tarpon. And that might also work for striped bass at times. In situations where you have really skinny bait fish like silver sides and sand eels, you probably want to tie those flies with the feathers cupping inward so that they don't splay. But I'd try it both ways and see what works. There's no right or wrong way. As long as the feathers are balanced and they don't make the fly twist and spin, try them both ways and see which works best. Brandon has a question. He lives on Lake Ontario, and he has a question about trolling flies for lake run brown trout. Is trolling with fly gear something is typically not done on big water or just not popular? I've done plenty of trolling on small ponds for brookies with plenty of success, and I'm sure I could simply extrapolate from what I've learned there, but I wonder if you have any words of wisdom to share for bigger water. Appropriate lures seem always to be a flavor of the day type decision with these fish, and I intend to tie my own based on whatever color spoons are working this spring. That makes total sense to me. But what can you tell us in the way of recommended equipment and rigging, sink rates with boat speed as a variable, common pitfalls? Well, I have to tell you, Brandon, that I have tried to troll for steelhead and brown trout and salmon with flies in Lake Ontario without success. But I only tried it a couple times, and I probably wasn't doing it in the right area, or was not the right day, or the fish weren't around, whatever. It should work. It should work as well as anything. Typically, in big water, you want to troll flies with a sinking line, with a full sinking line, and, a 7.5 to 9 foot leader. And you got to vary your boat speed. There's no right or wrong way. I would say that you want to troll at about the same speed as you would with a spoon. And you might look at some traditional main landlocked salmon patterns for types of bait fish to imitate. But basically, you want to imitate what the lake run browns are feeding on, alewives and emerald shiners and smelt and things like that. So I don't think it's going to be that much different than what you do in a brook trout pond. Probably a bigger fly and a little bit heavier line. But that's all I can tell you about that. Good luck, and I hope you do better than I did. This one's from Mike. Mike says, in one of your previous podcasts, you mentioned that when using fresh knotless tapered leader, you like to figure out where the taper ends and then cut it off and add a certain amount of extra tippet. He can't find it. He wants to know how he can find the diameter of his leader once he's cut some pieces off, so that he can add a new tippet instead of just tying on a new leader. Well, there's a couple of ways to do it, Mike. One is that you just fold, or you just take the piece of tippet material, a known piece of tippet material from a spool like 4X or 5X, and you draw it alongside the leader, the end of the leader, and you compare the diameters, you should be able to eyeball it pretty close. You're probably going to have 2X, 3X, 4X, 5X, et cetera, in your vest. So you want to just hold it alongside and eyeball it and see which is closest. The other thing you want to do is when you're using a fresh leader and you want to see where the tippet ends, you can bend the end of the tippet over and run it along the rest of the leader and see where the leader starts to taper, starts to get thicker, so you know how much tippet you have on there. Usually they come with about 2 feet of level tippet. Now, if you want to get fancy, you can buy a thickness gauge. These are used, this more or less a digital micrometer, and they're pretty cheap these days. I had an old micrometer that I must have had for 30 years, and it was a good one, and it finally broke, and I wanted to replace it, and I went onto the web and looked at replacements and realized that there are some really, really good thickness gauges out there that are relatively inexpensive and I'm sure very much accurate enough for what we're doing as anglers. They're used for people use them to measure wire, and they use them to measure the thickness of paper. Printers use it to measure the thickness of paper. A tippet can range a half a thousandth either way and still be considered 4X, so, or 3X or whatever. So the margin of error that we have when we're fishing is fairly large compared to people that are measuring wire and paper and stuff. So an inexpensive thickness gauge should work just fine for you. If you really want to do that, you can buy them online and in various places. You can buy them in a hardware store and all kinds of places like that. So try a thickness gauge if you're really worried about it. Otherwise, you can just eyeball those things. Okay, on to the commercial part of the podcast. So warning. The reason I wanted to do this is that I heard third hand somebody talked about recently about the Helios 2 rod being just a Helios 1 rod with a cosmetics upgrade. And that bothered me. It really, really upset me because it's not at all true. When people make fly rods, they try for continuous improvement, particularly at the high end of the rods. And Orvis wouldn't have come out with the Helios 2 if we weren't convinced that it was a superior rod to the Helios 1. And it really does a disservice to the rod designers and the rod manufacturers when someone says that, oh, it's just a cosmetics upgrade, because it's really not. A lot of time and a lot of research and a lot of testing went into these new rods. And so I thought, well, is that really true? Are they really better? I think they're better. I'm able to pick up a Helios 1, cast it, and pick up a Helios 2 and tell the difference instantly. We did a blind test recently at our guides rendezvous, and I was able to tell the Helios 2 instantly because they tracked better and were more accurate. And I didn't know which one was which, but I picked them both out right away in a 5-weight and an 8-weight. Was able to tell immediately. So what I did was I went around to a bunch of people at the guides rendezvous whose opinion I respect, who are not going to tell me what I want to hear. And I didn't warn them about anything or didn't prompt them other than to say, I want to ask you about the difference between Helios 1 and Helios 2. These are all people that I knew had cast both rods and fished both rods extensively. And so the people I talked to, I'll just give you introductions to all of them, and then we'll go on to their interviews. We're John Herzer. John is owner of Blackfoot River Outfitters. He's one of the most aggressive anglers I've ever seen. He's amazing. The guy's full of energy. He's really, really good. He's a lot of fun to fish with. He teases me a lot because I like to get out of the boat and fish, and he likes people to stay in the boat, or in a raft in his case. And we have a lot of laughs about that and a lot of fun. But John is an amazing angler, and so I respect his opinion very much. He's one of our rod testers. The next one is Spencer Heiga. Spencer is the head guide at Falcon's Ledge Lodge. Spencer is another guy that I've fished with quite a bit, and he's a great angler. Great angler in for with streamers and small dries, and I respect him very much. And then Dave and Amelia Jensen are a husband and wife guide team from Alberta, Canada. Two of the best fish spotters I have ever seen. Really amazing at spotting fish. They're both very stealthy. Then Todd Tanner. Todd is the fly fishing editor of Sporting Classics magazine. He lives in Montana. He fishes particularly the Missouri River a lot and is a very seasoned angler. Then Brian O'Keefe. Brian is the owner, founder, and co-founder with Todd Moen of Catch Magazine. And you've probably all enjoyed looking at the beautiful images in Catch Magazine. Brian is also just an amazing angler and caster. He's won many, many, many casting contests. He's a guy that can evaluate a rod instantly, and he's also a deadly angler, really fishy guy. And then finally, one of my heroes, all these people are my heroes, but this guy is special, and that's Hank Patterson. And Hank is just amazing. I don't know what to say about Hank. If you don't know of Hank Patterson, you need to go on to YouTube and Google Hank Patterson Fishing Guide and watch one of his videos, because the guy is just world class. He's as good as Lewis Coleman. So I hope you enjoy these. Again, it's a commercial plug, and I apologize for the sound quality. I did these kind of off the cuff at the guys' rendezvous, and there's some background noise. But you might hear, you might enjoy listening to some of these very, very competent anglers talk about the difference between two fly rods.
So what are we talking about? We're talking about H1 and H2.
Yeah, we're talking about H1 and H2. So I'm standing here at the rendezvous with John Herzer, who is a good friend, and we've had a lot of laughs together.
Yes.
He owns Blackfoot River Outfitters, great operation. You've seen him in the Orvis catalog. John, I want you to kind of articulate, you're a very analytical angler and very aggressive angler. I want you to articulate the differences between H1 and H2.
This is a great question, Tom, because I remember my first introduction to an H2 was when it didn't have H2 on the side of it, and you had some other writing on there, and it was in a prototype stage.
Oh, the second coming.
And we were floating down the Bitterroot River, and I was an H1 fan. I'm a fanatic because, and I'll throw you under the bus here a little bit. It was the only rod I'd ever felt that felt like a G. Loomis GLX, which,
okay,
you know, because that's, I like these light, crisp, fast rods. And then when I got an H1, I was like, wow, this is that and better. And so for my fishing, which is pretty, as you said, pretty aggressive, I'm a type AAA kind of, I'm all about production, right? And I don't care what I fish, nymphs, streamers, dries, bobbers, I don't care. I want to catch fish, and that's my job, is to help people catch fish. But when I'm casting, I want to deliver the line very efficiently, because as you know, you hate this, but we're in the boat all the time. I rarely let anybody get out of the boat.
Yes, I know that. Only do well, John.
So if you're out of, you know, if you're fishing in a stream and you're waiting, it's more contemplative than my fishing, which is maybe 3% waiting, literally, over the year.
Yeah.
It's very quick in big Western rivers, and I've got to pick up a big fly quick. I got to deliver it with one false cast or none and get it back. The only reason I false cast is dry the fly off. It's bugging the water all day. So I get the H1, and it does all those things very well. It's very crisp, and I like to do a lot of, like, snap mending, where I'll let line come to me over an indicator or over a big indicator fly, and I'll snap line above it and let my dropper or my nymphs hang straight down. And the H1 was all about that. And then you handed me this the second coming rod, which was the H2. I didn't know that. And you said, well, try this one. And I was like, yeah, I don't like it. It didn't cast quite the same. And I was disappointed when I said that's going to be the rod they had. But I have to say, I've changed my tune, and my brother hit it right on the head. He said, because we cast very similar and everything, but he said, you know what the difference is here? And we had a 5-weight H1, 9'5". We had an H2, 9'5". We're casting with the same exact line in the same instances, catching a lot of fish on the big hole one day. And he goes, you know what's amazing about this? He says, this is a better fishing tool, the H2. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I said, it's not quite as crisp. It's a little softer. You know, I like to boom that stuff out there. It does that, all those things. But I said, it just doesn't have that same just aggressive feel. But he was dead on, because we can set the hook harder with an H2 without breaking our line. We can set up a roll cast easier with it. And more than it, I think most importantly, I think it fights fish on a lighter tippet harder. It'll land fish faster than my H1. And if you'd asked me this last year or something, I probably wouldn't have realized that. And I can't take credit for realizing that. It was my brother. He's like, this is a better fishing rod, because you're on the Madison or on the Missouri, and you're catching those hot rainbows, and you're using 4 and 5X tippet. I mean, we break off a lot of fish over there, and especially clients who haven't fought big fish very much. I think I see less break offs with my H2 than my H1.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's a better fishing tool. Mm-hmm. The whole idea, the 20% less weight and all that stuff. Yeah, I like to pick up a rod. I'm a sailor, right? We have two fly shops, right? So we got to sell rods. But sells rods, they pick that rod up in their hand and it feels like a feather. They're like, what? Are you kidding? And the H2 doesn't have exactly that feel. But then when you tell them, you know, you let them know, and people, they trust your judgment, because we're on the river 150, 180 days a year. I don't know, an unbelievable amount. And, you know, if you tell them, look, you're going to catch more fish with this rod. You know, I mean, literally, physically can do that. You can land more fish on, especially on lighter tippets. Hook sets can be more aggressive, and it just gives just enough. So you've hit a pretty good home run. I'm looking forward to seeing what you're going to put out next.
Oh, great.
And
thanks,
I want to
John.
Be on that. I want to be one of those people checking those rods out.
Well, if you're nice to me.
Okay.
Thanks, John. So we're here with Spencer Higa, the head guide at Falcon's Ledge Lodge, one of our favorite operations. Terrific lodge. Spencer is an extremely experienced guide and fly fisherman. Tell me about the differences you see between the original Helios and the Helios 2. What's the difference?
Well, the original Helios, I mean, it was a nice rod. It was light. The biggest thing that I've noticed between the H1 and H2 is the strength. The H2 is much stronger. Seems like I've been able to catch bigger fish, more powerful fish, and been able to land them a little bit quicker with the H2.
Okay. How about casting characteristics? Do you see anything different?
Yeah, casting. You know, we fish a lot of small streams, big rivers. I've found that fishing like a big nymph rig, like Strike Indicator, a couple split shot, heavier nymphs, I can throw a little bit easier with that H2.
Cool. Well, that's nice to hear. Okay. Thanks, Spencer.
Yep.
So I just tracked down a husband and wife team, Dave and Amelia Jensen, who I've had the pleasure of fishing with before. They're two of the finest sight fishing guides I have ever seen, and videographers, guides, and now magazine owner, and lots of cool stuff. They fish a lot, and I wanted to ask you guys, both of you, about the H2 versus the H1.
Oh, that H2 rod. When we were doing the field test on some of the early prototypes that you guys got, the first thing that we noticed when we picked it up, it is light, and when we started casting, it had a power and a pop and a zip to it that you just can't describe. When you get out in the water and you're casting and it shoots, the second that rod loads and that line is going, when it turns over, you can't describe the feeling of the whole package.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, I remember a day on the Bow River where we were going after golden stones, and the distance that I could cast with that, literally on like a second, you know, you might get one or two false cast top, but then you're just shooting the line, and the smoothness of the rod, but the fact that it had a strength to it, a power behind it, and yet it was lightweight, like Dave said. The combination is just there. It's perfect.
So
yeah.
Over the H1. Over the original.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hands down.
Yes.
And did I mention Flyfish Alberta? I wanted to make sure that I mentioned flyfishalberta.com.
Yeah, that's that's pretty much hub central for us, you know, Flyfish Alberta. We got the, you know, guide company that we're doing some guiding, a little bit less guiding, but we're definitely focused on the sight fishing up in Alberta as well, and with the Alberta Fishing Guide magazine now as well through that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Todd Tanner, we're here at the Orvis Guides Rendezvous in Missoula. You're a you live in Montana. Where do you live?
Yeah, Big Fork, Tom.
Big Fork. So Todd's fairly local to here. Todd is the fishing editor of Sporting Classics magazine, and I wanted to ask you about your impression of the difference between the Helios 1 and the Helios 2.
I actually think it's night and day. I really like the Helios 1, but the Helios 2, in my mind, is a breakthrough. I mean, they're just incredibly sweet rods. They're fun to cast. They're smooth. They're super accurate, and they're just a hell of a fishing tool. I mean, you just don't find many rods like that.
So you see a big difference between the one and the two?
I really do see a big difference. I like the one, the twos that I fished, I love.
Yeah. Okay, so. Great. Thanks, Todd.
Oh, you're very welcome, Todd.
Okay, we're here at the Rendezvous with Lucas Bissett. Lucas came all the way from New Orleans. He's a red fishing guide, Orvis endorsed guide. Lucas, I want to ask you about your impressions of the H1 versus the H2, how different they are and what are the main differences?
Well, first thing I noticed with the H2 versus the H1 was it did feel a lot lighter in the hand. You know, I have customers that come from all over the world and they've fished with Orvis for a long time and they've had experience with a lot of the rods, and the first thing they noticed was lighter in hand. The other thing that I noticed was I put my rods, as most guides do, through some serious strenuous work, and the H2 has been far better as far as holding up, especially in the butt section. You know, in salt water you get a lot of, you know, that really strenuous bend at the cork. And I noticed that the H1 did at times seem to stress out a little faster than the H2 does. I noticed that the ferrule system seems to work a little bit better on the H2, in my opinion. It holds together better when you have like a poor caster or somebody who flails a little bit, as I like to say. And so I noticed that the way the ferrules fit together seems to hold together a lot better in those situations for me.
Good. Casting, any difference in the casting characteristics?
Well, I'm going to sound like an advertisement, but the way that the ferrules work, again, I noticed that there's a lot better transfer of energy, and that in the way I cast, I'm a very rough caster, very hard caster, fast caster, so I noticed that the H2 seems to hold up to my load that I put on the rod a lot better, so it transfers the energy a lot better, it shoots a lot better.
Great, Lucas, thank you very much. And the name of your outfit is Low Tide Charters. And he's in the catalog and on the website, Orvis Endorsed Guide, Lucas Bissett. Thanks, Lucas.
Thank you.
Here with Brian O'Keefe, old friend, I hate to say it, but one of the finest casters and anglers that I've ever known. And Brian, we've known each other for a long time, haven't we?
Yeah, we've had
a
good time.
And you're an honest guy. I know you're going to be a straight shooter. So tell me your impression of the difference between the first generation Helios and the second generation.
Well, I've had the pleasure to fish them both. I've taken them all over the place. I've had very good luck with durability with both the Helios, the original, and the Helios 2. I think if I just had to pick up a rod without a reel and just make sort of a cast in a store or in my house, I would notice that the Helios 2 felt a little lighter, a little crisper, snappier, you know, power in the butt without adding weight or bulk. Without a reel on them, they feel feather light. I liked Helios original. I thought it was a good, just all-around quick rod. I used it for my bass fishing with big poppers and lots of dry fly fishing all over Alaska. The Helios 2 just has this funny, magical, super light, strong feel. It's hard to really put into words, but when you put a line on it, load it, it's just a beautiful casting rod. And I have had zero problems with breakage or anything like that. And I've really fished them all over the place, from peacock bass to tarpon and permit. And I'm just loving them.
So you think it is an improvement, you think it is an improvement over the H1?
Yeah, I think blindfolded I could pick them apart. And H1 was setting the bar pretty high, but the Helios 2 has that feel where you have the lightness but with power and a really, really crisp action for great loops and long casts.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Tom. Good to see you.
Just imagine
All right, so I am here in Karas Park, Missoula, Montana, with my personal fly fishing hero, Hank Patterson.
Yeah, the illustrious Hank Patterson, high school graduate, college dropout, fly fishing guide.
Well, Hank, you could say that with a little more enthusiasm.
World-renowned fly fishing guide. And then, I've got a couple of yearbooks.
You do?
Yeah. Well, you sent them to me for free.
Oh,
and so
yeah,
I got,
right.
So yeah, yeah, so they're, and those are, it's nice because I don't get an opportunity to pretend like I'm reading a book very often.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to, you know, sit around reading a book, it's going to be about fly fishing. And so.
Yeah, it'd be nice if you'd send me a couple of yearbooks.
It'd be nice if I could sign your books.
Yeah.
And I could send those back to you, and you could, and then you'd have a couple of signed copies of your own book,
and that'd
be nice.
That would be a treasure.
Yeah.
That would be a real treasure.
Yeah, just something to either keep, you know, for generations to come, or just put on eBay.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I
because
like that.
At that point, they'd be worth, say, you know, half of, you know, what you could buy them for now.
Some guy actually called me from Seattle and said that he bought a book on eBay that I had inscribed to my sister. We don't get along well.
Well, that's, not now you don't.
No.
That's cutthroat.
That's
cutthroat. I mean, in a lot of ways, you got to appreciate your sister.
Yeah.
I mean, for that.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
If I was to
some money on
sell something or give, if I was to gift something to my sister and I found out she sold it, I wouldn't be angry. I would think that's how ingenious or, you know, she's trying to better her life. I'm falling apart on this.
Yeah,
but yeah. Yeah, so there's a smart word in there that I can't think of.
You know, I can't either. If you can't think
ingenuity,
of it, I
sure can. Ingenuitous.
Yeah, okay.
It's very ingenuitous
good
of
enough,
her
good enough,
is
good
what
enough.
It would be. So, yeah.
All right, so we're really here, you know, to talk about the Helios 1 versus the Helios 2.
Right, yeah.
And I know with your world-class expertise,
mm-hmm.
people are gonna listen to what you say. They're gonna wait for every word about the Helios 1 versus the Helios 2. So can you tell me how they differ in your mind?
Well, here's the thing. If you own a Helios 1 and you want something twice as good, that's why they did the numbering system. The folks over at Orvis got together and they said, hey, you know, this fly rod's twice as good as the old one. How do we indicate that, you know, simply and easily for people? And somebody was like, well, we could do like an A and a B thing. And that was like, well, that, you know, that's confusing. So they went with 2. So it's just twice as good as the Helios 1. You know, it casts better. It withstands a proper snap better. I can cast with a Helios 1, say, 250 yards on a dime. If we're talking about on a dime, I can cast 437 yards just, you know, willy-nilly if I don't care where it's going to land. But if I want to land the thing on a dime, about 237 yards. So with a Helios 2, I'm at 305.
Wow, so not quite twice as far.
No, not quite twice as far, but it's a smaller dime.
Yeah, and you probably got air resistance coming into it when you get
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I'm talking about obviously casting into a wind.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just standard how you test a fly rod. If you're out and you want to test a fly rod, you know, don't be one of these guys that goes into a fly shop and starts, like, shaking it, because I mean, it's not a 10-car rod, right? You don't need to shake it. You know, go outside, find yourself a good windstorm, tie on a size, say, 31 betis, cast that thing into the wind, and that's how you're going to know, is this the fly rod for me? And the Helios 2, and I'm not just saying this because I, you know, got 4 of them for free. I got, well, 2 of them were sent to me, and I shoplifted the other 2. But
2.5. We sent you a broken one, too.
Well, yeah, no, I broke one, but that was my fault. I can't blame the fly rod for the fact that I got angry and then just crushed it, and, you know, I poured gasoline and I started on fire. But it's a long story, but it got ruined, and then you guys sent me the wrong size, right? And then what happened was then you said send that one back, right, and we'll send you the right, like a 5-weight, and then I just kept both.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no, I thought.
You want some more?
Yeah, no, I would, yeah, it'd be nice, and I figured that, you know, for doing this interview, I should probably get my hands on a couple more.
Yeah, because, you know,
yeah.
They don't cost us anything.
Yeah.
I mean, we make them, so they don't.
Oh, no,
cost
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, no. I mean, they're free. I mean, they're free. It's like they fall off the Helios tree.
Yeah, really.
Out there in Vermont.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a fantastic fly rod. And if you haven't had the opportunity to cast one, then you haven't had the opportunity to cast correctly. And so you should go out there and try one out.
And buy 3 or 4.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, you need to, you know. I would say to buy even more if I felt like I was getting any sort of a kickback. Is that what we're talking about? Maybe I get some sort of a kickback or something.
Let's talk about that afterwards.
Like a forward slash Hank Patterson Helios site and people could go and buy those and then a portion of their proceeds, and I think people would be excited about that, would go directly to me and into my bank account.
90%, is that fair to you?
Well, you know, I mean, it's very fair to you, and that's all I care about.
Yeah, well, they have the
Give. Oh, my God. Imagine if we went and grabbed a couple down here in the park, and I signed them.
Oh, my God.
And then we put those online for sale.
Oh, my God.
And then,
to bring my rod.
Oh,
I could have had you sign my rod.
Yeah, I mean, and that would, and that came out weird. But the thing about that is that then, have you heard about, like, that one lady tweet pictured her and all the famous people at the Oscars and it crashed the tweeter thing?
No.
So if we were to sell a Hank Patterson signed rod, it might bring down Orvis.com.
It might, yeah.
We should probably not do it.
Okay, all right, we won't do it.
So, but yeah, no, good fly rod.
But anyways, Hank, thank you for taking your valuable time today. I know that you want to get back to the band and the beer.
I do.
Harris Bar, that's what you do best.
It's what an opportunity for you to have me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Gonna have fun.
That's great. Something.
In order to prove to you that the H2s are really different from the H1s, we've got going between April 26th and May 4th what we call the H2 Challenge. And if you go to an Orvis dealer or an Orvis company-owned retail store and you cast an H2 rod, and you can take your H1 or you can take any rod you want if you want to compare it, any brand of rod, and compare it to an H2, and you test cast the H2, you will be entered in a contest. And the contest is quite an amazing contest because the grand prize is a trip to El Pescador Lodge in Belize, which is one of my favorite places in the world. And the grand prize is really amazing because typically when you win a trip to a lodge, you have to get there. And this trip includes round-trip airfare from the nearest commercial airport to your location. So that's pretty cool. And it's for 4 nights of lodging and 3 days of fishing, guided fishing for permit, tarpon, and bonefish, and barracuda, perhaps. There are some second prize winners, Silver Sonic guide waiters, and there are five guide slings that we're also going to use as prizes. So it's a pretty cool promotion, and all you have to do is go and test cast an H2 rod at the nearest convenient location. So don't miss that, and I apologize if you're listening to this podcast on the archives, because after May 4th, 2014, this no longer applies.
Thanks for listening to the Orvis Fly Fishing Guide podcast with Tom Rosenbauer. Have a question for the show? Call our listener line at 802-362-8800 or email us at podcast@orvis.com. We have more free tips online at howtoflyfish.orvis.com and at orvisnews.com.